Hey there. With every new show that we bring on to this Imagine a Place network, and every episode, every video we launch, we're focused on delivering the best experience for you, our listener. We just celebrated the one-year mark for the Design Pop, and the host, Alexandra, is a total fan favorite on this network. She dives deep into the contract dealer designer community. She delivers career advice, specification tips. She explores the state of the profession, and she's just really fun to listen to. If this sounds like your show, I'm dropping a link in my notes where you can find the Design Pop.
The world is full of people, each with their own path and their own unique set of nuanced and often undefinable skills and competencies that have guided them. I've set out to uncover, reveal, and illuminate these skills and share them with you. I'm your host, Cheryl Durst, and this is The Skill Set, an Imagine a Place production. Hey, Solomon, welcome to The Skill Set. I'm super excited to talk to you. My day job, I'm the CEO of IIDA, which is a design association. And yesterday we had 30 students from K-State.
Nice. I know I've actually met you once and I've been to your office once. I feel like you always meet people twice. So I was very excited that it's pretty insane to me that I get to be like somewhat of a peer in a conversation with somebody I had speak to me as a student.
What program were you in? Were you in
interior architecture?
Okay. Yeah. So the 5 year.
Yeah. The grind.
So how did you get from K-State to sneaker design? Well, you know what? I'm going to back up. Why design? What led you down the design path?
Honestly, I feel like it was almost like an unavoidable force like that. I don't think that I was a super conscious, like, oh, look at all these types of jobs. I want to do this. But it was kind of just, I feel like everybody kind of has default settings, I feel like. And if I have, like, I've never really been able to go to sleep early and so I feel like if I'm up late, I have to do something creative. And that's kind of the default setting is I have to, like, that means my brain didn't do enough in the day. And that's like how I get it done.
So your first kind of foray from a brain standpoint was architecture?
Yeah. I think it's just like, I still feel, even though I'm not doing that as my career path, I think that if you're going to want to affect the most people in the biggest way, like, architect is everything to me. Like, I don't know, they just get to give an experience to people. And I think that's still what I do, but maybe in a different way.
And in talking to the students yesterday, and they kind of confirmed this for me, one of the things that I love about the K-State program is that they talk about structural and buildings from the inside out. And so that emphasis on, you know, what a human being is surrounded by has that same impact and effect by the exterior, right? The impact that we see a building. And so it's such a cohesive and organic program there. And it seems like you got the best of all worlds because there was the industrial piece, the structural piece. And then when you think about sneakers, you know, fashion is structure for the body.
For sure.
Right. And then when you think about a sneaker, I mean, that's a beautiful product, but it makes so many statements. It's a cultural statement. It's a comfort statement. It's a athletic statement. So how did sneaker design happen for you?
Yeah. So probably 3 years into school, I was getting a little worried for myself because I think I'm a little impatient, and architecture is such a slow build. Like, you really have to work a long time to choose. Like, I maybe control freak. I don't know like, there's a lot of negative ways to say a positive thing. Like, I think that I like to direct stuff, and in architecture, you could get lucky and have a really big break, could happen, but I was just kind of realizing I might want to do something that's faster paced and potentially smaller scale. And throughout school, I was always building tools to build my models or building. So then people are, oh, you should do product or whatever. And I was like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. I actually had a teacher, her name's Viba, professor named Viba, and she recommended that I kind of write an autobiographical kind of how I got from point A to point to school.
Yeah.
And what I realized is that sport and sport culture was something I never really wanted to give up. You just kind of have to if you're not amazing.
Right.
like you can be a coach. Everyone can do something. But I realized how important, like, there's like Legos in sports were like the two, like from conception almost, like those things were kind of there. And I started to think like how much I cared about equipment. And I happen to have a lot of friends who are in sports equipment or coaches or people at schools and other things. So it's like interesting to really look at what pieces had been set and like what the trajectory actually was saying. And I agreed with it, which was like, oh, she should do footwear. And I just kind of like, I don't know, it just kind of like worked out that way. And immediately, like, sorry to like ramble. When I decided that, like, I feel like the way that I function is pretty absolute. So as soon as I kind of decided that, I really committed to it and it was one of my busiest semesters, but I made sure to add at least an hour or two a day researching and drawing shoes, just because I was like, I felt like something that I don't remember who said it, but a lot of people have said similar things. It's like, if you're a library yourself, it's a lot harder to be, it's easier to make an impression or easier to be undeniable is like a good way to put it. And so since the moment I decided I would do footwear, I was like, I've got to know more than anybody else does. So like, I don't know like why they're going to like, who wants like a random architect? I got to get in. Yeah.
So you immersed yourself in kind of the art and science of sneakers.
Yeah.
Which place, think about what sneakers mean in the context of culture and contemporary society. And, you know, everybody remembers they either had Keds or they had Converse, or if your parents didn't buy you those, you had those bad knockoff cheap sneakers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
you got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere. But it's such a ubiquitous part of not just U.S. culture, but every culture, like global culture, has an attachment to sneakers. And it's like hard to even just call them footwear, right? It's
totally.
So, and the pandemic clearly had an effect on that. I think TSA pre-check, the ease of going through airport security. There was recently an article in the New York Times that was about a woman had written in a question to the Times, and she said, hey, I don't want to look like an American when I travel to Europe. What kind of shoes should I wear?
Yeah.
And so the answer was sneakers, and whether, you know, it was triple whites or, or Vejas but like kind of anything but Crocs. But like sneakers have become it's like they're like a universal language.
Totally.
Why? Why do you think that?
Well, I think that there's been, I mean, a very meta trend is towards comfort. I think that fashion swings a lot of directions. And so I always have stuff near my desk if I think something might come up. But I got these little, I actually thought you may enjoy something like this, but they're just these, they're called the Little Book of, and then it's just all the fashion houses.
Yes.
And they're a compact version of the stories. But why I bring that up is I have Dior, of course, is one of them, and then Chanel is one. And so to talk to sneakers, what I've realized is like the Dior approach to fashion was like, how do we accentuate femininity and make it even more extreme, more better, whatever, where Chanel was more like, how do we subvert what the expectation is for what we should be? And so sneakers, like, what are they? They were sports equipment that turned into, I mean, it's a leather good, so it has a premium feel a little bit by nature, I would say. There's a durability aspect, but the reality is that it is, to your point, just the, it's a staple. It's a statement of like, if you want to be wearing the right uniform for the clique or the team that you're playing for, you would choose the right equipment for that. And I think it's really fun as a designer to get to try to conjure up the next part of their uniform. Or like, if I'm designing a shoe for you, it's not going to look the same as if I design a shoe for, I don't know, not you, you know,
not
so
me.
It's like, like the, and so I think that why they're so popular is largely, I mean, they're pretty affordable. And then it's almost just like it, why are you going to wear dress shoes that, that potentially hurt at the end of the day when you can, I mean, and it's not, it used to be taboo, I would say. Even in my lifetime, there's been a massive switch in what you're supposed to wear on the side of a football game or in a job interview. Like, I would wear sneakers to an interview now, because if a company doesn't, I probably am not equipped to, like...
You don't want to work there if they don't accept
it. It would be tough.
Yeah.
It would be tough. Yeah.
Well, and that kind of movement in fashion. So there are a couple words that I hate. Like, I hate when people put residential and commercial together and came up with resimmercial. I kind of hate the word athleisure. I hate the word athleisure too. But you know what I mean.
Right.
And so that whole movement toward, right? And there were companies that had a huge role in that. Lululemon, you know, and again, it's when yoga pants became everyday pants.
Right.
And it was, and I won't say that life became more casual, but how we dressed for life certainly became more casual. And comfort, like, you know, you noted comfort right at the top of our conversation, because why put on things if you're not going to be comfortable in them?
There's a payoff though, right? And so like heels, a lot of people are still going to wear heels forever because you get something when you wear it. You get confidence or you get attention if
you
that's
get attention,
what you wanted, or you get...
Right?
Yeah,
it's a stance. So, like heels do say something.
Totally.
And you feel different in them.
Yeah. And that... So there's like a critical moment in my life where I got a pair of like neon turquoise. They're Jordan 1 low top shoes, but they're, the whole shoe was neon turquoise. And I never really had a colorful shoe. But as soon as I got those, I realized why everyone else does get a crazy colorful shoe sometime as an adult when they do, if they do. And it's because you feel... I was like, whoa, I feel like weirdly
confident.
What
did that do for
right
you?
Now.
What
yeah,
did, like, I mean, did you walk differently?
I probably did. I don't know. It's hard to, I feel like it's hard to be, I did notice, like, honestly, I'm a little bit angsty or rebellious. And so I noticed some people did not like that I wore them. And I kind of liked that too. Cause I was like, I don't mind being in, if you know, kind of like territory with fashion.
Yeah.
And that like, I remember it was at an event for like some architecture event. And I remember a lady walked by and she just said, "That's bold," and kept going. And I was like, oh.
New Balance as a brand, like, you know, for a long time, they had that brand as that was the dad shoe.
I would say not a long time. That's it
now still, right? That's Chad in the suburbs, you know, taking his kids to soccer.
Totally. Yeah.
It's a lane though.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about New Balance? Like, what is it? What does New Balance do for you?
I think that because of, it's surprisingly small as a company, like for how global and available our product is, there aren't a lot of us on the design side. And so because of that, it's almost inherently pretty entrepreneurial. And so if I'm willing to do extra, which I am at this point in life, willing to like crank a lot of stuff, I feel like it does become product, or it does become valuable steps towards something. And so internally, that's kind of an inside answer, I guess. From an external, like the actual product, I do really appreciate leather goods. And that is kind of our bread and butter, is we use pig suede, which has some nice properties over cow suede, for our classic like gray sneaker or yeah. And so I like that it's a bit of an underdog too. I think that it's kind of fun to, I don't know, when you break, like take these notches forward, it's kind of cool to see what you can get your team to do or get out there. Yeah.
So you've mentioned the word material and materiality a couple times. How much of an immersion into fabric and material, because that, I mean, that's such an important part of what you do, is that, and it seems like it's very fascinating to you too. But the feel of a shoe is critical. So incredibly important, right? And you don't necessarily want it to be heavy. You want there to be some lightness to it, yet still substantive. And then of course, in with the concerns around sustainability, people are anti-fast fashion. You want to make sure that it's so all the things, like many interior designers, you're finding yourself needing to be a material expert, but you're not a chemist, right?
Right. Well, and luckily, so the way that a footwear design team generally is built up, we do have like similar to an architecture firm or somewhere else where you have very specialized people within. Mm-hmm. And so luckily for me, I've gotten to work closely with our material designers, and they often have a little bit closer to that, like chemical expertise of like,
they've got that.
Luckily. Yeah. And so I have a developer as well who works, usually is kind of, between me and the factory, trying to make sure things are producible, making sure it works. And then we have our marketing, kind of person who gives out the brief and how we start. But to speak to materiality, I think it actually just made me think more like concept and the goal of a product, I think, is a total thing, right? And so if the concept starts with, I don't know, I have stuff sitting around, but I have like, if the concept is like, how do we bring, I don't know, like a Prada identity into a $120 running shoe.
Yeah.
When we go to the materials, we should be very obviously finding ties that make sense. I mean, we're not going to probably pay for a factory in Italy to like hand stitch everything or like whatever. We're not going to be able to do that, but we can give people a touch of that luxury they were going for. And a luxurious leather is going to be different than a really utility synthetic leather,
right?
Et cetera. And so the material, I would say, is definitely a critical. It can be the reason you make half the decisions on a shoe.
Sure.
And I think beyond that, I would say like maybe even more important than the design is the color, because you could save or kill any shoe with the color.
With
That's
the color.
I'd say that. Yeah.
Is it wrong to assume classic white is still the preferred color or not at all?
Nah, definitely is. Yeah, classic definitely. White. I feel like if I go anywhere, it's funny because people call it different things, but I've heard it called action leather. And so basically you take pretty much the cheapest leather you can get and then you kind of coat it in plastic. And that was made for sports, so it's really durable. But most of the more affordable all white shoes, you'll see that kind of like they basically emboss it with a leather texture because it's plastic on top of a split of leather, and doesn't really matter. But what I'm getting is that it's funny because it was such a utility origin that's become like, it's so critical to, especially I would say if you're like 20 to 40, there's like, you're going to have the whatever, like Adidas Samba, or I mean, you've named like a handful as well.
Yeah. Where, Yeah. You're just going to have those.
Something to get dirty.
Yeah, you're going to have those in your, right? I've heard people talk about their dress sneakers. Like they've got their everyday commuting sneakers.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so funny to see people. So I live in Chicago and I live in the northern suburbs. And so I take the train into the office. But even when I travel too, I've seen people do this. You'll have shoes that you commute in.
Yeah.
Sneakers that you commute in. And then you change into your.
Yep.
Dress sneakers or your work sneakers or whatever, because right, keeping them clean is all part of the gig. It's just I just find sneaker culture so fascinating for so many reasons. And again, it's just it's a common language. How many pairs of sneakers do you own? Out of curiosity.
Oh man. I should count again. I had a lot. Probably like 60 pairs of shoes that I've bought. But the thing is, since I'm designing shoes, like no idea. We have to do a lot of sampling to get it right. Not that I end up, most of my product I'm not wearing, but like if I can snag a cool sample somebody else did, you know, I might. Just because it's kind of like your own little library of details or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would guess like 60 pairs that are pairs I wear, but
and they're collectible too. I mean, there's a whole,
it's like car culture, but
it's
affordable.
Like car culture. Yeah.
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 I can't buy 60 like cool cars.
Yeah.
I can buy one,
can
maybe
buy
one day.
60 pairs of sneakers.
Yeah, exactly.
Do your parents wear your shoes?
The thing people don't always know, and it's hard to know, like, I don't know why you would, is we're working about 2 to 3 years ahead of what comes out. So I've worked in New Balance 3 years, so I did actually have a few things come out. I don't choose to make every shoe that I make. I'm given a brief. And so I did have a tennis shoe that was kind of a pickleballer, like a little bit older consumer. It's pretty fun. Very comfortable.
Pickleballer shoe. That's a whole category. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. But I'm really proud of those too. But I did get those. My mom does wear those ones.
Nice.
But otherwise, I've worked on mostly in my first year at New Balance. I worked on cleats. I had some slides that came out too that my mom got as well. But yeah, that's like the coolest thing to me is that she could wear. Yeah, honestly, like. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. That's got to be great for her. Like, I can just kind of picture her out and about, and you know, somebody compliments her on her shoes, and she's like, "My son designed these."
Yeah, I know. Just give her the flex. Totally. No, and I know she's like, I think fashion. Women are way more willing to deal with what fashion asks of people and then men. I'm not gonna say that totally, people might get mad. I'm generalizing, but like,
but super intriguing statement. Tell me why.
So I don't know if I can unwrap the whole of why, but what I was getting at is like, my mom has always really overtly supported, like, I loved like Kuji sweaters for a moment, probably 5 years back, and like it seems so insane to me in the moment to spend $100 on a sweater, like, and I know that, I mean, as like a college student, whatever, but my mom was like, she got it, you know, and there was just a feeling of like, I don't know, it feels good when people get why you like something and or whatever. And so I think that like my dad, he likes some stuff and I know what he likes and I can get him stuff he likes. But I think it's funny to see like the difference in reactions there. Why men and women are different there, I don't know. It's funny because I think sometimes generally men take pride in being kind of confident and outgoing kind of leaders, whatever. But I think in fashion, they're kind of afraid of being called out for being unique. And so I
100% see your hypothesis. And it's such an interesting thing that men, again, we're generalizing, but it does feel like fashion says that men can dress to blend in.
Yes.
Where women are more okay with dressing to stand out.
There's probably a million like historical societal reasons for these things that I can't process all of them, but I do think it's funny how it comes out sometimes as like this modern age where almost everything is unisex, that really like college age people wear big pants, cardigans, whatever. Like on paper, it almost always is fairly unisex. But I've noticed if things get more feminine, it gets way less unisex. Even though if in theory, it's like an even spectrum that you could be dead center on. But what I've noticed is it's actually more like a 80% of things could be, if it's feminine, that men won't wear it. And like that 20% that maybe like pink as an example of Americanized like color, like where like all of a sudden it's okay and it's kind of cool or whatever to do that. But like, I think it's funny to see even a little bit, those little nods to femininity sometimes make a product massive.
Yeah.
Like super. So New Balance is generally a pretty, like, there's probably too much to unpack in this, but I feel like when I look at shoes, especially, I can almost always see the hand of the designer and kind of their, like, I don't know, there's like masculine energy in some product and feminine energy in some, and some is pretty neutral, but like New Balance, I think, tended to lean into a more masculine approach to athletics. And so I keep having all these tangent stories, but there's a really, really special designer named Charlotte Lee, and she kind of came in and brought a little bit of a different energy to the product she's made for New Balance. And all, like, instantly we had like a million pairs sold, or selling shoe, meaning like every year we sell a million pairs of this new, and it's called a 327. It's, New Balance has a million number shoes, so no worries if you don't remember that. But like that shoe, as soon as I saw them when I was at that competition, I realized I was different because it has that, I could tell the hand was different, you know, like there's a female designer with a more neutral to female consumer in mind, but it wasn't necessarily, I don't know. And I just, and so I'm like, looking, dang, I need,
yeah. I'm looking at it right now and there is a nod to femininity with the shoe.
It's subtle, but it's there.
It's super subtle. Yeah.
Yeah. And toe down especially is critical for the, like when, if it's a female oriented product, that's like the, one of the most critical, like you got to nail that. Like, I don't know, but yeah.
Huh. So it's, but what you were saying before and with shoes, the, you know, we're in a moment with a larger conversation around gender neutral or gender fluidity and
gender in general. Yeah.
And you know, regardless of how you identify, again, that a sneaker can literally be genderless, right? Yep. Unless it has, you know, that kind of that nod, and it could be just a simple curve that gives it a more feminine feel, but it doesn't mean it's necessarily a sneaker for women. It just it just has a more feminine feel to it.
I think too, something that's sometimes hard to unwrap is, to me, when I think of like this, I think of like a bar graph, and maybe it's not actually, maybe it has a lot of other scattered points, but like if you have masculinity and femininity or just those two identities, to me, like, fashion wants to poke at that forever. Like any brand I've ever seen a runway show for in modern history, they push that line. And that's kind of the default trend, is to push that line to an extreme if you're a high fashion brand. And I think that that trickles down in a small way to, I mean, an everyday, whatever consumer. But when I think of those things, I think people want a balance and a mix. Like a lot of the white leather sneakers are pretty, I would say a lot of them are somewhat masculine oriented. However, that works well with the women's fashion trend of like they're wearing oversized pants and like they're wearing like different, you know, it works. And it's like, it wouldn't maybe work as well if you did like a flat or a, like maybe it just wouldn't quite. Right. So different, like flats and skinny jeans, that was a big thing, right?
That was a thing.
That works. But like, and even for men, like Toms are pretty much just flats for a neutral, whatever. Yeah. But like, that was, while skinny jeans were in, those flat shoes worked. But now bigger pants, got bigger shoes. It's like,
So how much time do you spend, and does it happen naturally, just observing human beings in their natural environment, what they're wearing, what they're doing, how they move in their clothing, like, right? You just talked about skinny jeans when they were a thing. Like, how much are you observing fashion trends all the time, I'm imagining. But do you just like people watching in general?
Yeah, I would say, like, I was thinking my answers the whole time. Not all the time, but the whole time.
The whole time.
Yeah, I remember, it's funny because it's just some things click into your brain and you can't, like, unlearn or forget, but it's almost like, I feel like when I think of people, I see this, like, big grid of attributes and you just start kind of putting these pins down on which attributes they are showing, and then you can kind of build a circle around what they might like to wear. Like, as a brand, like, for anybody, you could do this where you start to say, like, oh, well, she likes black. She likes, I remember your pop of black pins. I had one of those for a long time.
Yeah. Black.
Like, so, I mean, like, you can go down all these things, but I don't know that that means your shoes would be black either, but the, like, maybe that means they would be colorful instead. But like all I'm getting at is, like, I really like to look at patterns that way, because you can build these really realistic profiles of people, and you should. And then you can, instead of asking myself, what do I think looks cooler? I'm asking, what does she want to wear with her outfit today?
So that typology of, you know, like,
yeah,
the pickleball mom, or
yeah,
the,
yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And you should, in my opinion, and this isn't shared always, I think the best product to me is when you get all the way down to one person and you make it for them and you do it so well, all of their friends want it too or whatever. But
want
like,
that.
I think that it's a big mistake to start crazy broad and just keep saying, well, so-and-so wouldn't like this detail, so you should take that off, or so-and-so wouldn't like, because to me, I think of it like, if you have a really amazing, beautiful picture of a landscape and you just start blurring it and blurring it and blurring it, and all of a sudden you have, it's still a nice color of an abstract, like, gradient, but what was the original intent? Was it for, I don't, and so I think it's fun when you do get to make something, like, we've had a big moment with the athlete, Coco, like she's had a crazy, amazing, and I got to watch that process, and that was for her. Like, those shoes she wore.
Yeah.
They are very, like, of any product on our website, that's the one I would say is for one person.
Okay.
And they work for tons of people. I love them. I have a pair, but like they are for her, and the details are cool because of that, because she's cool. Like it,
and Coco Gauff, I mean, she's, you know, obviously a, you know, an athlete statement, a fashion statement. Yeah. She has a very specific look on and off the court.
Yep. Yeah. And she's just, I don't know, she's one of the, New Balance has, they have like a type, I'll say, for their athletes.
Yeah, perfect.
And like, she is that type. She's wildly humble. Like, I heard stories, at least I wasn't there for it, but she came into our like testing facility and was just like, it just felt like she's a guest visitor. Like, I would be a guest at some random place. And it's like, you know, you're like the person, like, you're our best, biggest athlete. Like, you're in, some people could disagree, whatever. She is so relevant and so like cool. It's just, I'm like, we got to keep capitalizing and making her feel like it's a good partnership.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, yeah.
She's a role model. She is, and you're right. She does
strong
seem, I mean, every interview.
Too.
Yeah. Strong family values, super safe and secure in how she views religion and her faith. And she's, you know, she doesn't make a big deal out of it, but she also doesn't hide that she's a person of faith either.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. I don't know. It's.
Who else out there? Who else out there are either style icons or for you? Who inspires you?
Oh man. There's a really cool, he's like a curator slash, maybe you could call him designer, but he is, his Instagram is Youthanan, which is Y-U-T-H and then like A-N-A-N. But he has a brand called Sillage, which is like,
is it Nicolas Chameau?
Yeah. So that guy's curation of stuff I get excited about a lot, and I have a few of his like pieces, I guess you call it. One's a crew neck sweatshirt, so it's not like a piece in the like fashion-y way, but the other is a cool like oversized dress shirt thing that I got. But That's a really cool one.
You know, it's fascinating with designers now, and I think I probably give credit to fashion for this, but you think about it, he's passed away now, but Virgil Abloh.
Totally. If I could have met any recently deceased people, he was up there. Such a smart and good guy. Yeah.
And he didn't, like, design for him started with architecture, right?
Yep.
And then he expanded to fashion and women's wear and knitwear, and he designed book covers. I mean, it was kind of all the things. And while that feels new, it's actually, when you kind of think about the kind of European concept of what designers do, they do all the parts that touch physically and intellectually the human being. And so you're not doing one thing, you're doing an entire environment. And it's just like, that's immersive design.
I think too, something that I was going to look for it. I have a quote on my phone from, he has some really cool books. They're definitely worth owning. I mean, and I know, like, they could almost be like a hotel lobby book where it just looks really cool, but they actually are very cool books. And like his quotes and ideas, honestly, the design, it's not that I didn't like it. I thought it was fine. But after I watched his Harvard speech, which was like another critical moment in my like design timeline, I watched that and I was just like, yes, like he's just right. You know, for me, at least, he has his rules and he does things based off of them. And to get there, he had a lot of answers and feelings that I also had. But he talks about why he went to architecture school in the quote that I have it somewhere. But I 100% related. It was just like he wanted to learn about design. It wasn't like he was there for a super specific thing. It was just like, it's just cool to make stuff. Like, I want to go there and like they, I don't know.
He had some great, before he passed away, there was a incredible exhibition at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago.
Yeah, yep.
And,
with his trampling process.
And he talked about how he never wanted to fit in a box, that it could be in a gray area. And he actually preferred things to be in a gray area, which I thought was really beautiful because most people aren't comfortable with gray area.
Totally.
And he said, you know, he said, you don't have to choose between high fashion and streetwear because fashion just is. And you don't have to necessarily make it fit in a nice, neat little box because fashion is about the person who is wearing it. And I'm like,
totally.
Like, and it sounds so simple, but I feel like that was such a profound thing. I have a notebook where I've got a bunch of his quotes, and one of my favorites is, the amount of random conversations that lead to culture shifting ideas is insane.
Yep. Totally. You never know. I mean, when I've met people that I've been lucky to interact with, I feel like you just never know who you're talking to, and they are important because you're getting to talk with them.
Right.
I think he's the perfect example of that for so many people probably that were in his life, is like, they probably saw something, and a lot of people see that little like, oh, they're different a little. They're a little, but like, you never, I don't know, if you're into fashion, it's like you never expect necessarily, oh, you're going to be the design director of like Louis Vuitton menswear, and make one of the biggest and most important collections they've made in probably, I don't know, people have differing opinions. To me, is one of my favorite, like the moment with him and Kanye. I know Kanye's done his own thing, but like, that's one of the most, that's like the biggest moment I've ever seen in fashion. Not that it is, but it's like, for me, I was like, that was
a moment for you.
Unreal. Yeah. I mean, he had like the Wizard of Oz, like knit Louis Vuitton sweaters. That's like a one of my like grail items maybe, but
I mean, and he was, you know, super humble kid from Rockford, Illinois, right?
Seemed like someone you'd want to meet for sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tap into the futurist in you. You talked a bit ago about meta trends. What do you think is next for, and you can, it can be fashion, it can be footwear, but what are you seeing out there 3 years out, 5 years out?
So there's a few things. So I feel like we all see Crocs every day now, and that's the world we live in. And it's the world we'll be in probably for a long time, because I've thought about, like, people ask the question, like, what's after Crocs? Because we're in sportswear, and people want to, like, out Crocs. And I don't think you do. I think Crocs have been what
just
they
let
are.
Them be.
I think, yeah, because if people want pure utility, it's hard to beat Crocs for walking around an airport, like, or whatever. Like, for aesthetics, like, obviously right. they're Crocs.
Right.
But that's not why you're buying them.
And they don't pretend to be anything else.
And that's what's great about them too, is they've done a good job capitalizing on the fact that they do their thing. But I would say a trend that I've been feeling a lot of is almost like anti-athleisure, because it's always there. There's anti-sneakers, there's whatever, but as soon as my, like, really fashion-y friends start really wanting something they can't quite find, that's when you know that's what you got to start making. So things like, I've noticed a lot of, like, men's loafers, for example, is kind of just shot, like, back into relevancy, or like, who's wearing a suit now? Because as soon as older people that aren't cool are just wearing polos, like, all of a sudden young people who are trying to be cool, like, they don't want to look like that, so they're going to wear their suit now or whatever. And so I feel like there's, like, a weird formal wave that could come on at any moment, or at least pieces. Like, maybe you wear your, like, and
so
I do
jackets,
see that.
For women, like, jackets and blazers made a comeback. And do you think that's a little bit of a reaction to the overt casualness when we were all stuck at home during the pandemic, that, like, there is something special about dressing up, and we didn't dress up for so long.
And I think, I mean, it's a funny game of, like, you want to look, if you're wealthy, you want to look wealthy, or you don't want to look wealthy, or whatever your thing is. And I think, like, if everyone can afford their athleisure suit, then what do you wear that they can't? And so, yes, there's, like, the Louis Vuitton athleisure suit or something, but I feel like maybe kind of a slightly separate thing, but if I walk around this winter, and you'll probably see it too, if you walk around, you'll probably see somebody in a crowd with a neon pink, like, puffer. And so athleisure is pretty skin tonal, I would say, is, like, a part of athleisure. And so Barbie movie is another link to me to, like, so if everything is unisex for the general people to be weird, you're going to be super, super pink or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that, I feel like it's kind of a funny, it can be, you can frame it in a really mean way, and so I won't, but I think if a certain type of person is wearing something, that means the opposite for somebody else. And that's always the swing, the pendulum, as always. And so it's funny how much I think people are okay with seeing right now, compared to when I was younger, like tattoos, as an example.
Right.
They don't mean you're a scary person in 2020. They might mean you roast coffee. Like, I don't know. And so it's like, that's like a really small example, but I don't expect it to be harder for me to get a job if I did have tattoos, unless they're, of course, wild, but, like, standard issue tattoos, you're not gonna, like, that's fine, that's almost cool, like, oh, they it's, get they're cultured, whatever,
it they become acceptable. I mean, ages ago jeans had kind of the same
thing, it's
right
work
it's,
wear
and now it's just it's work wear, it's everyday wear. There's an interesting conversation right now from a, like, we're not going to go political, but there's the whole conversation around, you know, a congressman who insisted on wearing his sweats. They've changed the dress code for the House of Representatives. And, you know, that is a place where you expect some degree of formality.
Well, I think that what I think of for that kind of topic, totally different feeling to me, where I think that it's good for jobs to have uniforms if the goal is to be perceived a certain way. If you want to, so even as a footwear designer, it's not like I accidentally stumbled into the clothes I'm wearing today for this call. And so just as you did not, you chose what you're wearing and you look the way you do on purpose. And I believe in that. And so with that being said, a company kind of has that same opportunity. My brother, so as an example, my brother was, he was a cargo pilot for a bit, and they just were like basically like a trucker uniform, and they got totally no respect at all. They're pilots. They're still pilots. They're amazing pilots. They're like going in storms, all this crazy stuff. But then all of a sudden, now he's going to work for a commercial airliner. What do they wear? They wear a suit.
There's
they maybe
a suit.
Have a cool, kind of cool hat. I don't know. But like, think about that. To me, is one of the purest examples of why you choose a uniform if you want a certain reaction. And so, yeah, if I want to look laid back or cool or hip or whatever, I'm going to choose clothes that look like that. And it's pretty obvious there. So if I'm a politician, maybe I'm trying to look like a normal person, or whatever the reason is to wear sweats in an important moment. But even normal people dress up a little, like, so it feels a little out of touch.
Yeah,
more maybe how that comes across on accident
that was,
or on purpose.
You know, it's a very of the moment conversation about how do we present ourselves in the places that we work, or if, you know, we know that people have a certain expectation about who we are and what we do, who we are and what we do. Like you talked about your brother as a cargo pilot, and what he wore was perfectly appropriate for a cargo pilot.
Yeah.
But as a commercial pilot, there is a different expectation. There's like this, there's a different level of stature. There's a different level of, right? You expect when you get on a plane that pilot is going to keep you safe and secure. And there's a look and feel to safety and security.
Totally.
And I think in this moment where everybody is struggling maybe with authenticity and identity, right? We want to send a message about who we are, but we also want to be true to ourselves. And so I think imposter syndrome happens with fashion as well.
Totally. 100%. So
the connections between what we wear and who we are and where that lives in our brain, like the psychology of fashion.
Yeah. How we show ourselves to the world.
Yeah. How are we showing up in the world? And I think of the context of myself, of, you know, being a Black woman of a certain age and when and where I grew up. And I remember, like, you know, with my parents saying when I would travel, like, we would always dress up. I mean, mostly because it was the 70s and that's what you did. But also my parents were like, as Black folks, we wanted to look a certain way because we wanted to be treated a certain way.
Totally. Yeah.
You know,
there's a, sorry to like,
no, go
there's
ahead.
There's a book that I got called Dandelion, and it's about Black dandies, and that there's kind of two faces to this idea. And it's a really, honestly, I got it because they're so stylish. It's like the, to me, it's like very hard to get past that in terms of just like, if you want to look like, if you want to make very cool images, that's the way to look. But the like, they kind of talk about this interesting thing where there's like two views on the kind of Black dandyism in that that book, and I really appreciated the actual soul of why they were doing it. And it's to your point, it's not just to be treated a certain way, but to also look better than the people treating you wrongly, and like to be. I mean, I think that it was just cool to me. It's like, what can you control? And they couldn't control everything,
right?
And it's really sad what they can't control or
right.
couldn't, but what they could, they did. And it
right.
shows. And that's like, it really resonated with me because I was like, that's the way to try to rebel.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you want, like, to me, I loved that. Like, just to outdo the oppressor.
You
like,
know, that's, yeah. Go above and beyond. And when, right? Because there is always this saying in the Black community and the minority community is that you always have to be 110% better. Right.
Yeah.
And so, that as the, you know, dressing above and beyond is a part of that. But, you know, also when Black folks didn't have money, they always had style. And it when you talked about that book, which I definitely want to check out, it made me think of, you know, Dapper Dan. with his boutique in Harlem, yeah. And he kind of brought high fashion to the hip hop world.
Totally. I feel like it's a funny thing. So to me, again, I've talked about this a bit of like how the trend kind of flips on its head over and over of like who is allowed or should wear something to who shouldn't or isn't or doesn't want to. But it's so funny to me looking at like how punk music, which is like the worst thing to somebody's ear at the time or the best, turned into a very commercial, like, oh, we'll play whatever. I mean, like Green Day as an example is pretty commercial. Then after Green Day gets more and more and more commercial. So it's not really like, you're not upsetting anybody. So it's not really as fun to do or as cool to do. And rap is very similar to me, where rap culture was very cutting edge, very in your face, very angry early on. Mm-hmm. And it changed a little bit. Some, not everyone, but most people, it was deadly at times. And then all of a sudden now it's like, what are you going to hear at any given kid's football or baseball or whatever sport? Like, you're going to hear like
pickleball.
Hip-hop.
You hear hip-hop at pickleball.
What do they play during commercials is kind of another way for me to think about it. And if they're playing hip hop during commercials, then like it's not upsetting to anybody anymore.
It's
and
mainstream. So
that was part of what I was thinking about the Dandelion book is like, it's not upsetting to people to wear Jordans or wear whatever sneakers. That's not upsetting to people anymore. Mm-hmm. So to find what's next for the people that want to push, that's why I'm starting to see some like there's room for these pieces that have been forgotten. They're like, maybe it won't happen, but it's like, that's where I see room is in this like kind of subtle, but I'm better than you because of this. Like, it's cool. I don't know.
Are there places that you like to go to get inspired? Like I've gone to Tokyo and I've gone to Hong Kong and I've gone to Des Moines and I've gone to Austin too. I mean, I love seeing what people are wearing kind of in context, but certainly some of the edgier fashion that I've seen, it's been like in Berlin,
makes sense.
Yeah. Where do you kind of like to go to see edge?
So if I were looking, I don't mind looking from a distance if it's a group that I don't know that I'm that edgy. However, I mean, I have Instagram and I have unlimited access to people's representations of themselves.
Yeah.
I know, which is, it would be cooler. And I would get, if I were designing for a group, I would be there. I would not be watching through Instagram. I would be there. Right. But since I'm working more on sports product at the moment. So it is generally not upsetting to anybody. I think that if it's for pleasure, I just take in as much as I can from anything I think feels new to me. I like instantly am digging into and I'm like, whoa, what is like, because I feel like if we are kind of statisticians or designers or whoever we want to call ourselves and we see something new, I think that should trigger part of your brain to be like, this is important. Or for me, it does. At least I'm like, oh, I'm going to take a screenshot, put that on like a board somewhere, like. And I feel like that's kind of how I get through things is just constantly looking for newness or old newness or reading whatever. Like, doesn't have to be it's just something that I haven't gotten to experience one way or another.
Yeah. I love that term old newness when we were talking about the 397 and I looked at it. It has a very retro feel to it.
Totally. Yeah.
It's like very recognizable and the
70s, like iconic.
Very 70s, like Puma kind of feel.
Totally.
And but the back of it is like a driving moccasin. And so when you were talking about this kind of return of the loafer, that driving mock back.
Yeah, there's a little formality in there.
There's a little prep to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is like I keep seeing bits and pieces. And whether it's like the influence of Clueless or whatever it is, I keep seeing like more
Clueless
plaid.
Is very relevant.
Yeah, yeah. But I keep seeing like more
rewatched
plaid.
Very recently.
Really?
I went on my like early 2000s kind of teen drama movies. There's so many. There's like five really important ones. But Clueless fashion, that guy that I mentioned, Nathan Schultz, he literally sent me like, he's like, watch for this. Think about like Billie Eilish. Yeah. Like, what is she wearing?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, that.
There are threads of those moments, right, that are coming back. And, you know, and that's whatever that saying is, everything old is new again.
Totally. Yeah, and if an aesthetic is really authentic and natural, then it will be a total aesthetic to me, meaning if you really like construction worker jackets, the construction worker who wore them probably has a hard hat on, probably has his orange shirt. Are you going to wear a hard hat and an orange shirt? No, you're going to wear his Carhartt jacket and a black turtleneck because you're like, whatever, you're a designer, but you're pretending to be a worker. I think of these kind of slightly mean-spirited, but not really, like poking fun at it. But I think of it sometimes like hard job cosplaying, and you just take like one item from that and throw that into your outfit, and it very effective. Like cowboy boots are another one I've seen a lot more of on people that are not in cowboy towns.
Not at all in cowboy towns.
I love it though, because it's like, what is it? It's a beautiful leather product. Mm-hmm. It has amazing handcrafted feel, like mm-hmm. details. It has a beautiful embroidery. It has that kind of Santa Fe, whatever. Yeah. Like, there's a graphic style too. I don't know. All these things, I'm like, that's really, I get it. But yeah, it's just like the cosplaying of, I see that a lot right now. Because what are we doing? We work on, a lot of people are just working online. Like, I think about like my ancestors who could build a table by hand or something, like whatever they could do. And I'm out here, like I can use really fast shortcuts in Illustrator. I can, I can type really well, probably compared to someone from 200 years ago.
Cosplay. That's a great way. I sometimes talk about work drag. That, you know, yep. I'm going to put on my work drag or work armor, right? To be something I almost am.
I love the feeling.
Of it.
Oh, man.
But totally. Like, so I was thinking when you were talking about that, I was thinking kind of this moment around, well, when you said Carhartt, kind of utilitarian chic. And so jumpsuits, utility suits, kind of the one piece thing, which is a great uniform. Like, that's the best. Because it's
super cool.
Yeah. I mean, it could be
Jordan calls them flight suits.
They have their flight suits.
So iconic. And like, if it's all about, I don't know. I know a lot of people, something that I can stand it. It's very, very forgivable, but I don't agree at all is when someone says they can't pull something off. I get it. I 100% understand what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the statement. The statement is more, I won't wear this. It's not actually like, because I don't like, yes, or no, you can't pull it off because you're choosing not to. But I don't think there's like a magic line that somebody got to cross. It's like they slowly built up to it, or they just didn't care the whole time, which, but like, I like when people try something, you know, like even if you fail, like at least you, like maybe orange isn't your color. I don't know. But it's like, at least you got the cool thing you thought was cool and you tried it, and like someone else can wear it. I was gonna show these. I have these on my other side. This is a brand called Both Paris, but you talked about like putting on a certain thing to get a certain feeling. I'm a pretty tall person, but if I wear an extra like huge loafer, I'm like, I just feel
what's the toe cap? What's that toe cap look like?
So this is like all rubber.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It was a different build than I expected. They're pretty fancy. I think these ones are made. Yeah, they have really nice factories, and they just, I don't know, it's cool leather and stuff.
But really nice.
I have a 2.5-year-old daughter, and we call them clompers. She has hers, and she'll like, can I put on like matching? So just it matching clompers? I'm like, of course. Anytime, but
so the last time I saw you was in a classroom, and now you are a designer, you're a dad, you are very much, I mean, you know, I had to stalk you online, very much setting trend, you are a commenter on fashion and trend, a word that you used within the first 2 minutes of our conversation. You talked about undeniable, and Solomon Renfro, you are undeniable. I the way your mind works, and I loved how our conversation was not linear at all.
No. ADHD, but that is what it is.
We were all over the place, but my friend, the influence that you have in the fashion world, the simple and not simple craft of footwear, I love how you've taken your love and interest in design and you've turned it into magic. Solomon Renfro, thank you for making dreams come true.
That was awesome. I loved him.
And I love that I met him when he was a student.
I know. I had no idea. I was like, oh.
He's like, I met you. I've been to your office.
Even before you hopped on, we were talking, and I was like, yeah, like, I work for OFS, because he was asking me, like, how did you become a producer? And I was like, oh, like, I work for a furniture company. He's like, oh, yeah, like, I know. Like, I know OFS. And I was like, oh. Well, Cheryl, she works at IID. He's like, yeah, IID, I know. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, sometimes, like, people don't know. So I was like, oh.
Yeah, most of the time people don't, but, like, there he was.
So can you just, in your words, who was Solomon Renfro to you?
Solomon Renfro, saying he is a sneaker designer, I don't think is enough. I think he referred to himself as a designer, but I think he is a student of human beings. And he is a student of adornment. He is a student of practicality. He crafts beautiful things that we wear, that we cherish, things that are useful, but also that are precious.
It's so funny. I love New Balance. And it was funny because you said it's the dad shoe, right? What's funny is New Balance to me, it's no longer this dad shoe. And he's like, yeah, I feel like it still is. But I'm like, I wear New Balance to the gym. And it's funny because I wear like like my leggings and like my high socks and like my New Balance shoes. And it's a gym vibe, you know, like it's a vibe, but it's funny because it totally was how dads would wear New Balance, like with the high socks and everything.
I do like this 327. It's cute.
Super cute.
The one that he talked about. And a couple of things he would say, I'm like, I was quickly looking at my phone.
Yeah.
So that I could look it up
too, because I wanted to reference what he was talking about.
It's a cute shoe. When I saw it, I'm like, oh, that's a 70s shoe. His brain moved from place to place to place in such an interesting way. Mm. And it was, some of it was personal. Some of it was, you can tell he loves fashion.
Yes.
And is a student of fashion, and you know he likes watching people and what they wear. But there was more to it than that. Like I think I used the phrase when we were talking, the psychology of fashion. Like he thinks about the connection between what we think about what we wear, and what we wear, what it means to us. Which that was, I probably could have spent another hour talking to him about that. Like he had so many interesting viewpoints. And you think about, you know, he studied architecture, you know, which there is a piece of that where you think about people. But he was so immersed in, right? Because you can't separate a person from what they wear. Like you are literally putting something on your body. Mm-hmm. And he seems so conscious of the connection. This sounds so obvious, but so conscious of the connection, but between what we wear means something to us.
Mm-hmm. He was really great. I feel like really inspirational for a lot of students. Like, I think that he had a lot of good insights. But you did mention that he got to where he needed to go so quickly.
Super quickly. Super quickly. And it's doable. I mean, it happens, but he also talked about how impatient he was. He didn't want that time kind of in the trenches, for lack of a better phrase. He's got this great job. He's a dad. It seems like he has moved through life quickly, but I don't think he knows any other way to move through life. If you enjoyed this episode, I would sincerely appreciate a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening. Thanks for tuning in to The Skill Set. I'm Cheryl Durst. See you in the next episode.